Imagine this scenario for a second, right?
Okay, I'm ready.
So it's a Sunday afternoon. You are sitting out on your balcony.
Oh, it's a classic Sunday setup.
Exactly. And you're wearing your most comfortable, like slightly embarrassing sweatpants. You know, the ones you would never actually wear out in public.
Right, the purely indoor sweatpants.
Yes. You've got a half-finished cup of coffee in one hand. You are completely absorbed in a genuinely brilliant book. And in your mind, you are untouchable. Like you are in your absolute impenetrable private refuge.
It's your sanctuary.
Right.
It is that rare, perfect, modern moment where you feel completely insulated from the demands of society.
Totally. Until the illusion just completely snaps.
Oh.
Because down on the sidewalk, a neighbor walks by.
Oh
Yeah,
no.
let's say it's a neighbor you only kind of know. And they stop, they look up, they see you in your sweatpants, and they offer that awkward half wave.
And in that tiny, excruciating microsecond, your sanctuary is just shattered.
It really is. You
Yeah.
either have to pretend you didn't see them and feel horribly guilty about it.
Which never works out.
No, it never does.
Oh.
Or you wave back and acknowledge that you are, in fact, perceivable, like you are back in the world.
Because a balcony is essentially an architectural trick. It plays a rather profound psychological game with us, you know?
How so?
While it offers the comfort and ownership of being inside your home while keeping you physically suspended right out there in the public sphere.
It is the ultimate threshold, and that specific tension, that very sudden realization that you are both hidden and completely exposed at the exact same time, is the focal point of today's deep dive.
It's such a fascinating tension to explore.
It really is. We're looking at a contemporary watercolor painting today. It's called Balcón de la 50, or Balcony of the 50. It was created by the artist Yero Duque in May of 2025.
Right, and he painted this from his studio in Whittier, California.
Exactly. And for you listening right now, I highly recommend pulling it up on your phone or computer at www.artcoloragua.com so you can follow along with us.
Yeah, it truly rewards sustained observation.
It really does.
Because, like, on the surface, it presents as a very quiet, almost tranquil image of a woman reading on a balcony. But beneath that initial read, it functions as this incredibly complex piece of social and emotional commentary.
Right, and our mission today is to uncover how this single image of a woman reading actually serves as a battleground. We're going to explore how it pits public social expectations against the deep, private psychological weight of aging.
It's a lot for one painting to hold,
It is. Okay,
really.
let's unpack this because before we even analyze the woman on the balcony, we really have to understand the specific universe Duke built around her.
Yeah, the setting is vital.
And that universe starts with a fascinating, almost paradoxical collision of geographies.
Geography is crucial here. Like we mentioned, Duke painted this in his California studio, which puts him thousands of miles away from the specific architectural vernacular he's putting on the paper.
Right.
So he is deliberately operating from a place of physical disconnection.
And his creative process bridges that disconnection in a really unusual way. To build the environment of the painting, he actually used artificial intelligence during the early stages of his composition.
Which is becoming more common, but his application is unique.
Yeah, he used AI prompts to merge two totally distinct architectural memories together. So he took the traditional, rather strict Andalusian style of Ca' Miranda in Sevilla, Spain.
Right, very classic Spanish architecture.
Exactly. And he mashed it up with the highly vibrant, slightly chaotic, everyday urban landscape of a traditional town in the Colombian coffee region.
He's taking two massive, distinct cultural histories and literally forcing them to share the same brick and mortar.
He is. But honestly, I have to push back on this method a little bit.
Oh, what is the hesitation with merging those styles?
Well, by forcing a Spanish street and a Colombian street to coexist through an AI algorithm, I mean, it feels like he might be destroying the real lived geography of both places.
I see what you're saying.
Right. Like, does the AI act like a giant digital blender that just purees real cultures until we are left with this, like, universal no place? It just seems counterintuitive to me. If you blend every color together, you just get gray. You end up with a universal nowhere instead of a hyper-specific, tangible hybrid culture.
Right. Yeah, that is a very common concern when we talk about digital amalgamation in fine art. But the blender metaphor doesn't quite capture what is happening mechanically here.
Okay, so what's a better way to look at it?
Think of the AI's role more like architectural scaffolding.
Scaffolding, as in purely structural.
Precisely. When you erect a building, the scaffolding provides the rigid geometric lines, right?
Yeah.
It's the framework that holds things up temporarily. But once the foundation is set, the scaffolding is entirely removed.
Oh, I see.
Duke is using AI to generate that underlying spatial geometry, like the vanishing points, the angles of the walls, the structural hybrid of Sevilla and Colombia.
So he's not keeping the actual AI imagery.
No, exactly. He doesn't leave the cold digital output on the canvas. He completely discards the digital aspect by painting over that structure with watercolor.
Which is totally different from AI.
Right. Watercolor is a highly unpredictable, deeply human and tactile medium.
So he uses the machine to build the skeleton, but the flesh and blood of the painting are entirely human.
Yes. He intentionally strips away the specific urban chronicles. He doesn't want you, the viewer, distracted by trying to locate this exact street corner on a map of Bogota or Sevilla.
He wants it to be more universal.
Exactly. The scaffolding gives him a distilled spatial essence, which he then translates into a universal stage for the mind. It's not about erasing a physical culture, you know?
Right.
It's about elevating the location into a psychological state.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
And if the geography is a universal stage set designed for the mind, then the balcony itself plays a very specific role on that stage.
Oh, absolutely. The balcony is the theatrical threshold. If we examine the historical and cultural significance of the balcony in traditional Spanish and Latin American towns, it becomes clear that it is much more than like an architectural flourish or just an extra few square feet to dry your clothes.
Right. It's not just a patio.
No, historically, the balcony is the original social network.
I can totally see that. It's the original newsfeed before the internet even existed.
It functioned as the town's panopticon.
Panopticon.
Yeah. So for those unfamiliar with the concept, a panopticon is a theoretical prison design where a central watchtower can observe all the inmates.
Right. I've heard of this.
And it creates a dynamic where people police their own behavior because they never know exactly when they are being watched.
Wow. Okay.
In a traditional village, the balcony serves that exact function. It is the socially sanctioned place where you go to watch the town.
You see who is walking with whom?
Who is skipping church, whose children are misbehaving, all of it. But the catch is, by standing out there to watch, you are inevitably presenting yourself to be watched and judged by the town in return.
Right. It's a two-way street. Bringing it back to that Sunday afternoon scenario for the listener. A balcony is a liminal space that gives you a completely false sense of security.
So true.
You have one foot safely planted inside the sanctuary of your home, behind your own locked doors, and your other foot is completely exposed to the demands, the scrutiny, and the policing of the street below.
And what's fascinating here is how that architectural reality translates to the emotional reality of Duke's painting.
How so?
In this specific watercolor, the balcony acts as a strict psychological limit. It is the exact line where the physical body starts interacting with the public and begins to retreat inwards.
It marks this, like, unavoidable vital transition point between the external persona and the internal self.
Exactly.
Which naturally draws our eyes to the actual focal point of the painting, the lone figure existing on this very tense threshold.
The woman reading.
Yes, it's a woman. And she is deeply engrossed in reading a book. And I think the most compelling part of this piece is that how we interpret her physical posture changes the entire meaning of the artwork.
Oh, completely. Depending on how you read her body language, you are looking at two completely divergent narratives.
Okay, let me make the case for the first narrative then, because I view this painting as a profound story of defiance.
Defiance. Okay, let's hear it.
Think about the social context we just established, right?
Right.
For a woman entering her 50s, living in a demanding traditional society where the balcony is the town panopticon.
Right.
Simply tuning out the entire neighborhood to read a book in broad daylight is an act of territorial independence.
Oh, I see. So you view her reading not as passive, but as a deliberate reclaiming of public space.
Absolutely. She is broadcasting to the town, like, this is my intellectual space, and I'm going to exercise my right to it right here under my own rules.
That's a strong read.
And there's a brilliant visual detail that supports this. The loudest, most aggressive element in the entire painting isn't the woman herself.
No.
No, it's the supersaturated, vibrant cluster of red geraniums planted right on the railing.
Oh, the geraniums. Yeah, the contrast of those flowers against the pale blue stucco is impossible to ignore.
It really is. And anyone who has ever tried to keep a balcony garden alive knows that those geraniums aren't just passive Andalusian decoration.
They take work.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Keeping flowers that vibrant requires physical action. You have to go out there in the heat, water them, prune the dead leaves, nurture them.
Right.
Those bright red flowers represent a will to care. They represent vitality. They are a lively, vivid rebellion against the mundane everyday life.
They're very intentional.
She is actively keeping life blooming on the border of her house while completely ignoring the audience on the street that expects her attention.
Well, that is a highly active, outward-facing interpretation. It assumes a significant amount of external friction, you know, a woman actively fighting against the gaze of her society.
You don't buy it.
I'm not saying it's wrong, but if we analyze the biomechanics and the specific geometry of the painting, a much more introspective narrative emerges.
Oh, really? How does the geometry contradict the idea of rebellion?
It comes down to how tightly controlled and enclosed Duke's composition is. The painting relies on rigid verticality, and the framing is intentionally claustrophobic.
Claustrophobic in what way?
Well, the artist has cropped the image so aggressively that he entirely cuts out the sky above and the street below.
Oh, that's a great point. We don't actually see the plaza or the neighbors or that panopticon you mentioned earlier.
Right. We don't see the audience, which kind of undercuts the idea that she is defying them. The environment on the paper physically shuts out the external world.
That's true.
And crucially, we have to look at the biomechanics of the woman's posture. She isn't standing up straight.
No, she's sitting.
And she isn't puffing her chest out to the town or claiming her territory like a conqueror on a fortress wall. Right?
Right, she's sort of hunched.
Exactly. Her body curls inward. She's leaning away from the sunlight and retreating back toward the cavernous, dark interior of the room behind her.
She is.
And most importantly, her head is resting incredibly heavily on her hand.
She does look like she is physically collapsing into the book.
In the broader history of art, that specific heavy-headed pose, you know, the head physically supported by the hand or fist, is the classic iconography of melancholy.
Really? Like a universally recognized symbol?
Yes. Think of Albrecht Dürer's famous engraving, Melancholia the First. This visual shorthand goes all the way back to ancient humoral theory.
Humoral theory. Wait, like the four humors.
Exactly. Where melancholy was associated with an excess of black bile.
Right.
Which supposedly made the body feel literally heavy and sluggish. The human head weighs roughly 10 to 12 pounds, right?
Yeah, it's heavy.
By depicting a figure who cannot seem to support the physical weight of her own head, the artist is showing us a mind so weighed down by deep, heavy thoughts that the body is exhausted by it.
Oh, wow. So she isn't fighting the street at all. Her back is emotionally turned to it.
Exactly. Her silence isn't a weapon deployed against her neighbors. It's a profound, solitary meditation. The posture suggests an immense internal gravity.
Okay, so if she isn't projecting her energy outward to fight the town, then she must be confronting something immense within herself.
Yes.
And how does the psychological erosion of that internal meditation manifest in the physical paint on the canvas? Because that brings us to the title of the piece, which completely unlocked the painting for me.
Ah, yes. The title is the skeleton key to the entire psychological landscape of the watercolor.
So the piece is titled Balcón de la 50. Now, at first glance, you might assume that means 50th Street.
Right, like a standard geographical address.
Right. But the core psychological twist of this painting is that La 50 does not mean a street. It represents an age.
50 years old.
Exactly. The artist is capturing this woman at the exact moment she is turning 50.
By titling it La 50, Duke is mapping a chronological milestone directly onto a physical architectural space.
It's so brilliant.
It is. Reaching the age of 50 is, metaphorically, stepping onto a balcony of your own life.
Oh, I love that.
It is a unique vantage point where you are positioned to look out at the half century that has already happened while simultaneously looking backward into the dark interior of whatever time remains.
Wow.
The painting is entirely about the serene, heavy acceptance of lived time and maturity.
And the physical environment of the balcony mirrors that aging process so beautifully. Like, let's look at the wall right behind her.
The texture there is incredible.
We have this peeling pale blue stucco, and underneath it, the rough, raw red bricks are exposed to the elements.
Right.
Initially, a viewer might just read that as a socioeconomic indicator.
Right.
Like a sign that this is a working class neighborhood where building maintenance is deferred.
Sure.
But in the context of Law 50, it becomes a direct, incredibly tactile dialogue with the woman herself.
That architectural skin of the building and the human skin of the woman are experiencing the exact same reality.
Yes. They're aging in unison. The building is worn down by the rain, the sun, and the friction of the years. Mm-hmm. And the woman is worn down by her lived experience, her memories, and the passage of time.
It's a very parallel process.
But neither of them is depicted as ruined. They're both portrayed with this brutal, undeniable dignity. Like, the erosion itself is beautiful.
It is.
And just to provide a mandatory factual note on how that erosion physically exists on the artwork, Duke painted this on heavy 640-gram cold-pressed Arches paper using Daniel Smith watercolors.
Oh, okay. And that material choice inherently supports the thematic weight of the image.
Right.
But speaking of how physical details can sometimes interfere with thematic weight, there is a fascinating note from Jarduk's own creative process that highlights exactly what he wanted us to focus on.
Are you referring to a self-critique?
Yes. Artists are famously their own harshest critics, but what they choose to criticize often reveals the true heartbeat of the artwork.
That's very true.
After finishing the painting, Duke was actually quite critical of his own execution regarding the balcony's railing.
Which is really surprising because the railing looks incredibly detailed.
It does.
He painted this intricate, looping wrought iron design. It's the exact kind of beautiful traditional metalwork you see all over Sevilla and traditional Colombian architecture.
But that detail was exactly his problem with it.
Wait, really?
Yeah. If we connect this to the bigger picture of the woman turning 50, Duke felt that the intricate physical details of the ironwork ended up visually competing with the figure of the woman.
Oh, I see. He wanted absolute, undisturbed internal quietude for her.
Exactly.
So he felt the railing was too loud.
Yes. He worried that the physical details of the ironwork, you know, the decorative swirls, the contrast of the metal patterns, threatened to become visual noise.
That makes sense.
If we, the viewers, are busy admiring the craftsmanship of the architecture, we are distracted from connecting with the woman's vital silent pause. He didn't want us looking at a beautifully rendered Spanish railing. He wanted us sitting quietly in the heavy silence of her 50th year.
Wow. So what does this all mean for you, the listener, who is looking at this piece?
It's a lot to take in.
It is. We have a woman sitting on a balcony, built from the digital AI-generated ghosts of Spain and Colombia, but painted with the profoundly human touch of watercolor.
Yeah.
We have bright red geraniums screaming with vitality, juxtaposed against a crumbling blue wall that physically mirrors the reality of aging.
Right.
And we have a posture that could be read as fierce, territorial defiance of the public gaze, or deep, melancholic introspection brought on by the weight of a half century of life. It feels like the painting actively resists giving us a definitive answer.
And that ambiguity is the true genius of choosing a balcony as the setting.
Because it's a boundary.
Exactly. A balcony, by its very architectural definition, is a liminal space. Hmm. It belongs entirely to the private sanctuary of the house, yet it hangs completely over the public domain of the street.
Right.
It is perhaps the only architectural space that allows two opposing realities to exist simultaneously.
It holds the contradiction without forcing a resolution.
Yes. The friction you experience when you look at her, the uncertainty of whether she is projecting her energy outward to conquer the public space or retracting her energy inward under the profound psychological weight of memory and time, is intentional.
It's supposed to be unresolved.
Exactly. The painting doesn't resolve that friction because turning 50, you know, standing on the threshold of maturity, does not magically resolve the frictions of life.
That's profound.
The tension remains. It is ultimately up to the viewer to decide where her energy is moving.
It just makes you want to stare at the canvas for hours to figure out where you stand on that threshold.
It really does.
And I really invite everyone listening to do exactly that. Go to www.artcoloragua.com, look at Balcón de la 50, zoom in on those bright red geraniums fighting for life.
Look at the eroded, peeling blue wall.
And look closely at the heavy, leaning posture of the woman reading. Decide for yourself if she is bravely shutting the town out, or if she is simply sinking deep into the architecture of her own mind.
And as you observe her, you know, suspended there in the afternoon sunlight, I want to leave you with one final question to consider.
Oh, I'm intrigued. What is the question?
Well, it's a thought that isn't explicitly painted on the paper, but is the inevitable next chapter of this captured moment.
Okay.
If this balcony represents the tense boundary between public expectations and private realities for a woman turning 50,
yeah.
What happens when the afternoon finally ends?
Oh, wow.
What happens when she eventually finishes her chapter, closes the book, stands up, steps entirely backward off that balcony, and walks into the dark, unexplored cavern of that interior room, and shuts the door?
Oh, that brings a completely different chill to the painting.
It forces us to ask where our true autonomy actually lives. Does true freedom lie on the boundary, out in the sunlight on the balcony, where we can be seen by the town actively choosing to ignore them?
Or does true freedom only exist in the complete, unseen, unperceivable isolation of the inside, where no neighbor can ever wave at you? That brings us right back to that Sunday afternoon on your own balcony, holding your coffee. You might feel free while you are sitting out there, but you are still in the light, waiting for the illusion of intimacy to shatter.
Waiting for the wave.
Right. Maybe true peace is just accepting the weight of your own life, going inside, and finally shutting out the sun.
It is certainly something to ponder the next time you step out your front door.
It really is. Well, thank you for taking this deep dive with us. Keep looking closer, and we will see you next time.